Welcome to the MILF Way. Mindful, intuitive, lifestyle, fitness. An all-encompassing wellness podcast featuring some of the most successful, influential parents and experts out there. I'm your host, Cherokee Luker, mother, model, fitness trainer, and wellness enthusiast. Join me as we dive into all things MILF. Welcome back, everyone. I'm chatting with the Michelangelo of the vagina today, guys. So get ready for a very interesting conversation with Dr. Amir Marashi. Dr. Amir is a board-certified gynecologist who specializes in labiaplasty, vaginoplasty, pelvic pain, and endometriosis. He's also the creator and founder of Saray, which is the first pleasure product brand designed by physicians. I learned so much in my conversation with Dr. Amir and got to ask so many questions that I think a lot of women want to ask but are afraid to. Dr. Amir is an open book when it comes to discussing women's vaginas, and he's also such an advocate for women's pleasure, which I really admire and appreciate. This conversation really takes the taboo away from these types of topics and just brings the science back into it. On top of being the best of the best when it comes to vaginal rejuvenation, Dr. Amir's approach to life, both personally and professionally, is really beautiful and inspiring. In this episode, we discuss everything from labiaplasty, vaginoplasty, how important the angle of the vagina is when it comes to achieving the most pleasure during sex. We talk the benefits of orgasm, ways to improve pleasure at home, the importance of thinking time, prioritizing genuine connection, and so much more. Also, on a side note, after my discussion with Megan Morin on the last episode, which I highly recommend listening to if you haven't already, I've decided to split the show up into seasons. That being said, this episode will wrap the season of the show and I will pick back up in the fall. So in the meantime, I recommend going back and listening to any episode you haven't gotten a chance to tune into yet and sharing them with loved ones, leaving a rating and review, just anything really to support the show because it means so much to me. There are 52 episodes to choose from, and I've poured my heart and soul into each and every one of them. And I feel very confident about ending the season with Dr. Amir and know that you all are going to walk away feeling so informed and inspired by this conversation. So I hope you all have a beautiful summer and I will be back in the fall. Enjoy this episode. Thank you so much for being here today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I was racking my brain and I was like trying to find new and interesting guests. And I was like thinking back to our shoot with Mother. And I was like, okay, Dr. Amir would actually be so perfect because obviously my audience is majority women and a lot of new mothers, a lot of expecting mothers, a lot of young girls. So older women too. So it was perfect. And when we met in person, I remember sitting in the makeup chair getting ready to shoot and we just were having a discussion and I feel like I just wanted to keep asking you a million questions because you're just such a wealth of knowledge. So let's just jump right into it. How did you become interested in gynecology?
I wanted to always become a doctor and that is the only thing I knew how to do because my father is a physician and I worked with him in the operating room since I was a kid. I was 4 years old. I'm following my father. That was during the war that back in Iran, Iran-Iraq war. So I was in the OR with him all the time. I would see dead people, surgeries. And I didn't know any other jobs to do. So I had to become a doctor. And then as I grew up, of course, I really got into orthopedic surgery. That's what my father does. I went to med school when I was 15 years old and finished when I was 21, 22.
Oh
but I remember during even medical school, I was doing orthopedic surgeries. So I didn't think I'm going to become a gynecologist.
Right.
But there was a part that it really stuck with me. You know, back then, to get married in Iran, you had to be a virgin. I mean, most people. Otherwise, you could get in trouble. You could have gotten, like, even killed by the family of the groom. So that virginity had to be there, and they needed to test you for that. So I got involved in doing hymenoplasties.
Wow.
I became friends with this doctor who's my dad's friend. I would go to the OR with him. I would bring my friends who need a hymenoplasty, and I started doing them later on my own. So I learned a lot about, you know, gynecology very early on, and lots of things happened between then and when I started GYN. But when I came to US, it was a no-brainer. I'm like, this is something I want to do.
And you're very good at it. And you're also so passionate about it, which I really admire, like meeting you in person and just hearing you speak about women's health and women's vaginas and how we can improve things. And it explains why you're called the vagina whisperer.
No, I think anything you do, you have to be passionate about it. But this is something I really love. I talk to my patients all the time. I text them myself back and forth. People leave messages on Instagram, and sometimes after 2 days, they hear me sending them a voice message and they're like, oh, we didn't expect you are going to be the one who answers it. I'm like, listen, if I do it, I want to do it right. And I really love it because, you know, it's a very intimate field. You know, being a gynecologist, especially what I do, I help people who can't have, let's say, good orgasms, get better orgasms. I fix the angle of the vagina. I do things that, you know, they are super intimate. And these patients forever become like very good friends. They become my fans. And they're like, look, you changed my life because I didn't have this feeling before. And now I start feeling it. So it makes me very happy.
Oh, yeah, because you have to develop such a rapport with your clients because it's literally like the most personal field of medicine that you can really be in, essentially, because women are coming in and they're literally spreading their legs for you. So it's like they have to trust you. You have to develop that personal relationship. And you've been doing it for so long and you've been exposed to it. It's probably just so normalized to you at this point, right? Do you remember the first vagina you ever did?
The first vagina I ever did professionally. So.
Oh my goodness. I bet you have so many crazy stories.
I have so many crazy stories. This is actually back in Iran. It's a friend of mine who had a girlfriend, but unfortunately, they couldn't get married. Something happened and she was pregnant. She got pregnant, and at the same time, I mean, she couldn't tell her parents she got pregnant. So fortunately or unfortunately, she had a miscarriage. So it's like, I don't know, she's pregnant, but she's bleeding. So I took her to one of my dad's friends, and we found out that she's having a miscarriage. But at the same time, she's supposed to get married to somebody else. It's an arranged marriage in like 2 months from them. So
wow.
That was the first hymenoplasty that I did with help of course, another gynecologist who trained me on them. And I was probably back then, I was in second year of med school. I want to say I was 17 years old, probably.
Oh, or my gosh.
16 or 17. So that's the first vagina I professionally worked on.
Wow, that's crazy to put it into perspective of like most boys at that age are literally just sticking their penis in a vagina for the first time and you're literally operating on them. So crazy. How do you restore a hymen and like make it so that way they're like re-virginized?
First of all, it's being backwards. It's nothing that anybody would need to do. But the question is that these guys, you know, in these villages, let's say, they would have killed their wife if she wasn't bleeding the first night. So that's what I'm trying to protect them. But to make it bleed is very easy. I mean, you can put some stitches and all those. But the problem is that some families, they're like, oh, that wouldn't be enough for them. So the mother-in-law, the mother of the husband, the day before marriage, they're like, oh, I want to take you to a doctor to look at it and confirm, write a certificate that you are a virgin. I mean, this is 30 years ago, 20 something years ago, these days, it's much easier right now. That's not happening anymore.
Right. But
that is what I learned, how to restore it. That even if I look at it myself in a month or 2 months from now, I wouldn't be able to tell.
That is amazing.
I would be able to tell because I'm the one who did it. But right. I developed this technique. And of course, you know, it's like driving. The more of it you do, the better you get.
Of course.
So I got to a point that sometimes I look at these patients, are you sure you're not a virgin? And I don't get these patients as often anymore who want to become a virgin. But even in the U.S. right now, at least once a month or twice a month, I have a patient for hymenoplasty. These are mostly girls who lived here. They are completely Americanized. But let's say from a culture that now they want to go get married to their cousin and they want to go import their cousin from back home, whether it is, I don't want to name countries. There are many countries that have this tradition. And this guy who like literally lived under the rock for all his life.
Right.
Now getting married to this girl. If the girl doesn't bleed, yes, he's going to be in the U.S. He can't really kill the girl, but it's going to ruin their relationship. So.
Wow.
Cherokee, this is very different to fix this vaginas and to make them virgin because it's not, in Iran was like, okay, so you had like sex twice, but still everything is tied.
Right.
You bring the hymen together. But for some people that come to me and they're like, no, I want to get married to my cousin. She had sex for the past 10 years. So I'm like, listen, even if you start bleeding, then everything is so loose and relaxed that he would be like, what's going on here? So,
right.
You have to do a vaginoplasty, bring everything together, and then do a hymenoplasty to make the hymen look brand new. So yeah, it's lots of stories.
Wow. If you could estimate like how many vaginas you've worked on, what would you say the number would be?
You know, surgically, I mean, we calculated like the labioplasties that I've done. Just that's not even not hymenoplasty, not vaginoplasty. I've been involved with over 6,000-7,000 labioplasties.
Wow.
That's just to make the lips smaller.
Right.
I've done a lot of vaginoplasties. To have done procedures, many.
Wow. Yeah, you probably can't even count, huh? Yeah, so you specialize in labioplasty, vaginoplasty, but you also specialize in endometriosis, right? And pelvic pain as well, right?
Of course, yes.
Okay. So what's like the most common thing that women are coming to you for? Is it labioplasty? Is it vaginoplasty? Or is it kind of just like an equal mix of everything?
You know, it's a mix of everything. These days, especially with the procedure that I created, it's been in the works for the past 6 years. A lot of people come to us mostly to improve their orgasms.
Okay.
That is probably the most amount of visits because, you know, orgasms are really important, Cherokee.
Right.
So you don't know how important they are until you start actually feeling them becoming much better.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like eating. If you eat crap all the time, you look at, like, I mean, this is the food. And then you start having like a really good food that plays with your taste buds. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
This is exactly like that. And remember, one good orgasm, you get like one orgasm, the amount of internal morphines that you're getting, endorphins and enkephalins, are 100 times more than when you go to the gym for 1 hour and run on the treadmill and kill yourself. 100 times more. So just masturbate and it's like you get the same high.
Yeah.
Oxytocin that you get from that. You know, oxytocin is the happy hormone.
Yes.
Right. Now they sell you the nasal spray for oxytocin for hundreds of dollars. You get a good orgasm.
And it's free.
It's free. So a lot of patients come to me for orgasm improvement, which then it has different steps. Sometimes you need a vaginoplasty with it. Sometimes you need to just fix the angle of the vagina. Sometimes you need to do injections, which I do. Anything from the stem cells to exosome to PRP, all of those stuff.
Yeah, so it's more so people coming to you. I mean, I'm sure it's a mix of wanting more pleasure and also a lot about the aesthetics too, because I feel like labioplasty is a lot about how the vagina looks, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So to improve orgasm, I know you talk a lot about the angle of how things are angled. I remember you speaking on that when we were in Miami together. So how do you improve the angle?
You know what? I speak about it all the time. And this is in the back of my computer. It's all about the angle.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the clitoris, by the way. Most people don't really know the anatomy of clitoris.
Right, yeah.
This is how a clitoris looks like.
Yeah.
Right? So what you see from outside, it's only the glands of the clitoris. People see the glands and they're like, oh, this is the clitoris. I'm like, no, that's just the tip of the clitoris.
Right.
Clitoris is like penis, you know, this is the tip of the iceberg, but penis, everything is outside. For clitoris, there are parts that are inside. And just like penis, this entire thing gets engorged. Now, for men, there is no need. I mean, there is a need for it to get engorged and have the erection before they can actually have penetration. For women, you know what? You don't need to really be stimulated. I mean, it's important to be, but let's say you're having a quickie or you're just doing it for the guy, even if you are not in the mood, he can stick it in, which is not the right thing to do. That's why foreplay is very important.
Right.
To make sure this is completely
engorged, you know,
stimulated, engorged, and then the feeling is going to be a lot more. Now, about the angle, underneath this sits the vagina. Mm-hmm. So you have a canal, that's your vagina, and vagina is like has a downwards angle.
Okay. Right?
So it's not normally flat. People think that, oh, you go in, it's like flat. No.
Mm-hmm.
When you enter the vagina, if this is the entrance of the vagina, you see anus.
Yep.
If you turn it to the side, vagina is not this flat line.
Right.
It's like this. It goes down.
Interesting. Yeah.
Why does it go down? Because when you stimulate, when you have sex, the penis is supposed to go and hit the front wall of the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
The front wall is the most sensitive wall of the vagina. Why? Because first of all, clitoris is sitting right on top of the front wall.
That's where all the nerve endings are.
And there are 12,000 nerve endings in the front wall of the vagina.
Wow.
So those 12,000 nerve endings are really important. That's why you want to stimulate somebody, right? Yes, clitoris, the outside of it is very sensitive. But if you go in the vagina, you want to stimulate the front wall. You never go in and try to dig in the back wall.
Right.
It doesn't do anything. So the front wall is very important and it's very sensitive. Now, what happens as we age? This angle is normally downwards.
Mm.
As we age, slowly it becomes flat, right?
Right.
Because we lose the collagen and all the tissue that you have behind the entrance.
Okay.
And if you have vaginal birth, even more. So the opening of the vagina becomes closer to your anus. So it used to open a little bit. Now it opens all the way down to here.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
That is the biggest issue. So what we do is that you bring this together, right? And you bring the inside together. You build up the muscles to make the opening come higher. So it was flat. Now you bring it back and make it downwards. So you're going to have a lot more, you know, stimulation to the front wall of the vagina.
That is so fascinating. So you kind of just already answered the question I was going to ask, like, what does childbirth do to the angle? It makes it more flat, right?
So listen, when you have childbirth, what happens is that even if you don't have the vaginal delivery,
mm-hmm.
what happens, baby's head or body, this entire fluid that's inside your uterus, sitting in pelvis for a very long time.
Right.
Now, if you have a vaginal delivery, that even disrupts the muscles. Imagine stretching all these rubber bands, you know.
Right.
As you stretch the rubber band, what happens? Well, it goes back to normal. But it doesn't ever go back, especially if something is sitting in it for like 12 hours. It's never going to go back to the size that it was. Now imagine as rubber bands, as they get older, what's going to happen when you pull it and you let go? You're going to see these tiny cracks in it. It's never going to go back to the normal. those cracks, think of it as lack of collagen. Mm-hmm. New perky rubber band has a lot of collagen. You pull it, it goes back. As it gets older, you have less collagen. Same thing happened in my face. I used to be very plump and this used to be here. Mm-hmm. Now there are these lines. It dropped. Right. Same thing happens to the angle. It becomes flat. But the problem is that, yes, this is part of aging.
Right.
It happens to everyone. It's part of childbirth. It happens to everyone. The reason I talk about it is that I want to take the taboo away from it, you know, because if you don't like your lips, you go get them injected. If you don't like these lines, you get this injected. But nobody talks about improving your sex life, although it's one of the most important things, most important reasons people even get divorces.
Exactly. I know that must be a little bit frustrating on your end, because I feel like I'm sure you see a lot of high profile people come in, and I'm sure they're probably not really willing to talk about what they've gotten done, especially with you. Like, say if it's like they're a nose job or something and they go to a plastic surgeon, they're willing to like give credit to the surgeon who has worked on their face. But with you, I feel like people want to keep it so hush-hush. And that's why I like having these conversations, is because I feel like it needs to be more normalized and more talked about, because we need to embrace it, like, especially as women. I feel like it's something that we should be talking about in normal conversations when we're like going to lunch or, you know.
No, listen, I appreciate you talking about this, because this is really to empower women and to tell them about things that exist. And I mean, right now is much better than 10 years ago. But I tell you what happens. My Instagram, let's say I post something and is about a procedure. And then I get this patient who's a patient of mine who's coming to me almost every like 3-4 months to get these injections. She loves them. Her husband loves it. And she comes from Hollywood. And she's like, oh, by the way, that other procedure you did, do you think I'm a candidate for? Mm-hmm. I'm like, how do you know about that procedure? She's like, oh, on your Instagram, you're not following me. She's like, of course I'm not following you. I'm like, why? She's like, nobody needs to know this vagina had work done on it.
Oh my gosh, people are crazy.
Exact same thing you said. There was another patient who paid us a lot of money. You know, this is another really high-end actress.
Right.
She paid us, I usually use her as an example. Julia Roberts has never been my patient. So I say somebody at the level of Julia, right?
Right.
I can't tell you the name of my patient. Anyways, at her time, she was like, so this patient, she loves me so much. We are friends. We text back and forth. She came to me. We closed the office for half a day. We did her surgery. Her entourage was, everybody was outside.
Yeah.
Private, in, out, all of these things, and paid a lot of money. And she comes back for follow-up. And we keep texting. She's like, I'm so happy. My husband is so happy. You gave us something that we never had.
Aww.
And for that, I'm always thankful to you. If there is ever anything I can do for you, please let me know. That's exactly what she said. I'm like, listen, I would love for us to take a selfie together and put it on, you know, on your story or something. You don't even need to tell anyone. And she's like, Marashi, slow down. I gave you like this much money. I would give you just as much for nobody to ever know something like this happens. I'm like, so why did you offer? She's like, no, I meant if you want to go on a TV show or you want to go to Hollywood, you need something, or you've come to town, you need like a reservation in a restaurant. I'm like, listen, I don't need any of these things.
Yeah. You're like, I just want credit where it's due, you know?
But she said the same thing. She said, if you were the one who was doing my lips, I would tell everybody about it.
Right. Yeah. What is the recovery like after you get a procedure done by you? Say a labiaplasty. What is the recovery like for that?
So I'm glad that you're specific. So for labioplasty, basically no sex for 6 weeks.
Okay.
For most of the surgical ones, no sex for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. But you go back to your normal life, like literally the same day, if not the day after.
Oh, wow.
So the patients have surgery on this table, let's say. Mm-hmm. They go to recovery room immediately after. And they go home or back to their hotel an hour to 2 hours later. They do their normal life, but of course they had a surgery, so...
Just be careful.
They be careful. No douching, no tampons, no sex.
Can you exercise?
Exercising, you can start in 2 weeks, but you got to be mindful of the pelvic floor. And right. that depends exactly on what kind of surgery you get. You don't want to put too much pressure. But Cherokee, the way I do the surgeries is very minimally invasive. So something that may take another doctor, let's say, hour to do it or half an hour to do it. For me, sometimes it takes 4 hours. Why? Because we cut very meticulously. Mm. I stitch it one by one with very small stitches because the outcome for me is very important. So I do the same protocol for labioplasty that they would do when they do blepharoplasty on your eyelid. So it's very boring for everybody in the OR, but the results are so amazing that I'm like, you know what? I don't want to do mass production.
Right.
And you know, the patients that I have, they really appreciate it.
Quality over quantity.
It's really the quality.
Yeah.
And we try to do it the right way for everyone. And I have a lot of doctors who come get trained with me. When they come, they're like, wow, you make it look so easy. But we don't see like even a drop of blood because I take my time in. The thing that happens is that the more bleeding you have, the more... basically insult you put on any tissue, what's going to happen? You create more inflammation.
Right.
The more inflammation you have, the healing is going to happen slower.
Okay.
So people get this big swelling and they're like, oh, you know what? For 6 weeks, I was swollen. I do a lot of revision of botched labioplasties.
I bet.
When these patients come to me, I do the surgery. They're like, I can't believe there's no pain afterwards because we had so much pain last time.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. You respect the tissue. That's what my father always told me. He used to do this huge like amputation of arm. The whole hand was amputated. He would sit for like 20 hours under microscope, put everything back together.
Oh my goodness.
And the pain level was so low. And that's what he said. He said, if you respect the tissue, is going to respect you back.
Yeah.
Same thing.
That makes so much sense. Rather than rushing it, that's another question I wanted to ask you is how do you prep for surgery? Like I always think about surgeons and how much like effort and energy and attention it takes. Like say like you're super tired one day and you have surgery. Like how do you prep for it?
When you have that commitment, especially to your patients, and, you know, most of my patients travel to us. Like right now, I'm sitting in Houston operating room.
Okay.
I'm either in Houston, New York, Miami, Dubai. We're supposed to go to Bahrain soon this summer. I'm going to do some stuff in California. But the patients most of the time travel to us. I always think to myself, let's say tomorrow, Mary is coming to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a makeup name.
Yeah.
But she's coming all the way from Iceland or she's coming from London.
Mm-hmm.
She's coming all the way here to see me. How difficult it is for them to plan their trip.
Right.
Pay for their hotel. Do A, B, C, D. I'm like, it's going to be so unfair to them if I'm not on my A game. So when I do have the surgeries, I make sure I'm getting my rest. I mean, sleep is very important. I try to get my sleep all the time, even if I don't get it. Because sometimes I have consultations at like 2 a.m. with, let's say, Dubai.
Right.
Or with somebody like in China, we are talking. So what happens, if that happens, I make sure during the day I nap and all of those. So, and then, you know, there are different things that for everybody, different things works for me. I do a little bit of meditation. I like to go for like a good hour on treadmill.
Yeah.
You know, run.
Just to get your mind straight, because I'm sure it's very mental. It's mentally exhausting, physically exhausting. Like, I give you so much credit because I cannot even imagine.
These are easy days, I feel like, right. You know, because I used to deliver babies at the same time, too.
Yeah.
You know, the last baby I delivered was my son.
Aww.
7 years ago. So I used to deliver babies as well. After him, I started.
That is so special.
I did the C-section myself.
That's really special that you got to deliver your son.
I wouldn't trust anybody else
exactly.
As much as, you know, I trust myself.
Yeah.
So it was a very good experience.
Yeah.
But what happened, those days were more difficult because I would be on labor floor. And, you know, with labor floor, you don't know when your patient is going to go to labor, when you're going to get to sleep. So I would be on labor floor. And then next day, I had to do surgery. So I made a pact with myself and I made this promise. I'm like, well, I have to pick and choose. Although I love delivering babies and that's gives you such a good intimate relationship with your patient. I'm like, I cannot do that if I want to be on my A game for, you know, labioplasties, vaginoplasties, orgasm improvement.
Right. So you had to pick one.
That's when I stopped.
Yeah. So for any woman out there, say they're listening to this and they can't afford coming in for a vaginoplasty or labioplasty, are there things that we can do at home to help improve? I know it's probably hard to improve the aesthetic, like the looks of it, but like more so like the tightness of it. Like I know obviously there's Kegel exercises, there's different things that we can be doing to improve our pelvic floor, but like what are your tips for at-home treatments?
So I'm going to tell you, you know, it's all about the angle. So the angle is very important.
Yeah.
And you want to make the angle instead of having it flat. Mm-hmm. You want to make it downward.
Okay.
So what did we do? And this is, you know, everything I do, we do it by research. I want to show you. We created this procedure protocol called clitogram. So we actually do a sonogram on the clitoris.
Okay.
I have my sonogram machine. I do it on the clitoris. This is mobile. I take it to even my patients in the Hamptons when I go to their house. You know,
wow.
If I want to inject them, I do it with this. But anyways.
What is that? Does that just tell the blood flow of the clitoris or what is that?
Very good. So this is kind of like when you are pregnant, you look at the baby.
Uh-huh. Oh,
with
okay.
This, we look at the clitoris.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever did this. So we have a protocol, me and actually Dr. Lovey, who she's a very smart woman. She works with me on Saray, on my brand that we created.
Yeah, which we'll definitely talk about in a second.
We did a lot of research. And what's happening with the research is that I wanted to make sure everything is actually working.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to see the stimulation is in the clitoris. So you look at the clitoral blood flow. And you know what works and what doesn't work. So guess what? How to improve it? We wanted to see, let's say there's a procedure we created, Vagilangelo. I created it that I put some stitches inside the vagina, which is much cheaper than doing a full vaginoplasty.
Oh.
So you just come in the office. This was, we call it a lunchtime procedure.
I love it.
To correct the angle. So you come in. We put a couple of stitches inside, we fix the angle, and that's it. You go back to work. So a lot of my patients who were like lawyers in New York or they even doctors, they would come for the lunch break.
Wow.
And they would get this done. So that's something that's financially a lot more feasible.
More accessible, yeah.
Very cheap, more accessible. So far, we trained over 120 doctors.
Wow.
Internationally. It's a procedure I created myself. I created it. It's a very effective procedure. Most people say, oh, my orgasms are so much better after this.
Amazing.
And the tightness is much better and all of those. My anesthesiologist gave me the name and we patented it. It's called, we trademarked the name. It's Vagilangelo. Because that's what he's calling me. Yeah.
I love it. That's so cool.
He's like, you are the Michelangelo of the vagina. So this is what we do. We look to see the angle got better. And we at the same time, we see there's better blood supply.
Okay.
Now, I tell people, if you don't have the means to even come and do a Vagilangelo, there are different things you can do. So we did this research to see what sex position is most rewarding for women, meaning that in which one you get the most amount of engorgement.
Right, yeah.
In the clitoris, and we actually published it. It's in Sexology. It's not in New York Post or something. It's actually in a medical journal.
Oh, amazing.
So based on what I told you, what position do you think is the best?
I mean, for me personally, it's when I'm on top.
Okay.
I feel like a lot of women like being on top because maybe they can like control it, maybe.
You can change the angle.
Yeah.
Exactly, because you can change the angle and do it.
What is it?
So I tell you. So imagine the clitoris, the vagina is underneath, any position that the front wall of the vagina is most stimulated. So we found out the most satisfying, that you get the most amount of engorgement in the clitoris, it's missionary with the pillow underneath the buttocks.
Yes, that's the key. That's the secret sauce, is the pillow under the butt.
So look, this is the vagina
entry.
You put a pillow, you already fix the angle.
Right. Oh my God, it's all about the angle.
It's all about the angle. Now, we created one other thing too that people are like, what are you talking about? But this is too big, not this size of it. What's this?
I mean, it looks like my butt plug, but larger, a lot larger.
This is very large. So this is a butt plug. So we created one in Saray. We call it the angle rectifier because same thing. Look, you want to bring this angle, the entry up, mm-hmm. so the angle becomes downwards.
Oh.
You can put this inside your butt and it fixes the angle. And if you have sex in missionary position with this in your butt or in any position, the orgasms are so much stronger because you are like literally shooting for the clitoris.
Oh my goodness. You guys should create a pillow too.
We have a pillow that we created. It's not out yet.
Yes. Ooh, I'm so excited. So yeah, let's talk a little bit more about Saray and the pleasure aspect of all of this and how you decided to start Saray and what kind of toys and tools do you offer for people out there? The angle rectifier is one, or anal rectifier.
Angle.
Angle. Oh, angle or is it anal?
Angle.
Oh, okay.
Angle.
I got it right the first time. Oh, my God. Okay.
So, look, Saray all started from the same notion, what I'm doing in my practice. First of all, I want to take the taboo away from everything about woman's orgasm.
Yeah.
But the second thing is that I think it needs to be scientific.
Absolutely, yeah.
We want to bring the science back to the bedroom. So that was the whole thing about it.
Yeah, because it gives it more credibility. It like takes the shame away from it, I feel like.
And look, you want things that actually work.
Right.
Listen, you can buy this vibrator that's in like a really nice packaging mm-hmm. and flash and all of those. And then you're like, well, it's okay. I mean, everything works, but to what extent?
Right.
So we wanted to really bring science in it. So I started Saray with, of course, we have some investors that really believed in it because they saw the things that I'm doing and they saw the research we are conducting.
Yeah.
And I also hired another doctor with myself who is, she's a medical engineer and chemical engineer from Harvard. And then she went to Yale to do med school. And after that med school, she goes to do radiology. So I'm like, listen, everything we do, we need to really research it. So every single tool that we made, mm-hmm. there is a reason for it. And there is a difference with other tools. And we're not in any toy stores out there. So all these like adult shops, we don't sell in any of them.
You're not on Santa Monica Boulevard at the sex shop.
Hustler? No,
no, we are not.
But it's a very chic packaging that you wouldn't even know. You would think maybe it's a perfume or something.
Right.
A lot of medical spas take it. So there are a few different things. First of all, if you see most of our stuff are black,
mm-hmm.
why do you think it's black?
So you can clean it better?
Very good. Very smart. So as a gynecologist, 75% of office visits in gynecology are due to either yeast infection mm-hmm. or bacterial vaginosis,
right.
some kind of discharge. And your tools are one of the biggest culprits in giving you these infections. Why?
Ugh.
Because we don't wash them really well.
Yeah.
People wash them, they leave it by the bedside. You're horny, you're doing something with your husband on your own, you just take it, you don't go to wash it again.
Right.
It's more difficult to get away with it when it's black, because if there's even a little lint on it,
you can see,
you know, you would see, this was in my bag, and you can see all the like little imperfections on it right now.
Right.
So that is very important. So that was the reason we did it black. Our main ones are black. And then the silicon, we wanted it to be like medical grade silicon. Mm-hmm. So non-porous, all of those. Now, there were so many options. And it's funny, I think there were over 10 different options for silicon. And it would look the same. And when I took this to my investors, it would cost, this is per unit cost, that like a few dollars more than if we did it with like the normal silicon. Mm. And they told me, Amir, this is a lot of money. I'm like, well, listen, I'm putting my name as a board certified gynecologist on this. I want it to be very different. And I'm like, a few dollars is nothing.
Right.
They're like, you don't understand finance. You know, when you sell a lot of them, it's a lot of difference. But we wanted to do medical grade silicon, like the best silicon that you can actually even use in your body.
Amazing.
All of those stuff. So it's a lot of it is the passion that I have. And then with the research, you know, like this one,
mm-hmm.
this is the Spellbound stimulator, was really important for me to fit the anatomy of the vagina. So this area vibrates, right? So it goes inside and vibrates against the G-spot or G-zone.
Yeah.
And this part, you can change the angle depending on your angle, and it stays in that angle. So you can leave it like this. You can go like this. So you put this here, and you put this on the glands of clitoris. So you are stimulating. You are stimulating the clitoris both at the glands, like somebody is doing like oral sex.
Love.
And you're stimulating the inside. Somebody's massaging your G-zone at the same. This is irresistible. Like, anybody, my friends, anybody who's using it, they're like, you can't not come with it. You know, it just, and it's so fast.
Oh my God. I need to try that.
You have to.
I have kind of a personal question. This might be TMI, but how do I make my clit on the outside more sensitive? Because for me, when I have orgasms, it's more through penetration and it's more internal, which I love. Like, they're amazing. But at the same time, I feel like I can't really enjoy oral sex as much as I would like to, because my outer clit, I don't know if that's the right terminology or that's the anatomy of it, but
the glands of it.
Yeah, it's not as sensitive as inside. So how do you do that? How do you fix that?
So the best way to do it, I would say, is first of all, a lot of foreplay. You want to make it engorged.
Okay.
That's very important. So you want to bring the blood supply to it.
Right.
What if we created, which is actually, this could help you. Remind me to send you one. This is our enchantment gel.
Mm.
So this is a formulation that I was working on for the past like six, seven years. And I would give this to patients. I mean, I had my pharmacist make it before, and I would give it to patients, and they would really, it would put their sex on a different level.
Is it a lube?
So it's not a lube. It's a gel. I mean, I don't want you to use it as a lube. Listen, if you have sex, you could. There's no problem, but it's not really a lube.
Okay.
It's something that when you do foreplay, you put it around the clitoris, your labia in the area, and it brings a lot of blood supply to there.
Oh, okay.
And there is no other formulation on the market like this. We did a lot of studies. We actually did a study to show how much more blood supply comes to clitoris. And because of that, it's so funny. We recently, like last year, if you see on top,
yeah,
we got the Beacon Award, which is really big.
Wow.
So, but listen, this one, because it's such a unique formulation and putting it together. And everybody who uses it, I mean, I created this for women. But now a lot of men, they are like, wow, we really enjoy this because it's the same anatomy. They put it on the glands of penis and they're like, wow, we got the best erection we ever had.
Wow. So it's benefiting both. That's so cool. Oh my God.
So use it 5 minutes before you start.
Okay. For men out there who are listening, what are some tips that you have for the men in our lives to help in that area? Do you have any?
100%. You know, for men is that, first of all, they need to be able to read the room, you know, basically know when is the time to do it, when is not the time to do it. Don't be too pushy. That's really important. And when it's the time to do it, it's really, you need to take your time. You know, with women, you need to really take your time, do a lot of foreplay. Foreplay is very important because remember, women are different than us.
Right.
For men, when you ejaculate, there is a refractory period. You can't immediately start having sex again. You need some time to be able to get the next erection.
Right.
Now, when you're younger, that time could be so much shorter. Mm-hmm. When you become like 50 years old, that time could be like 2 days sometimes. You know? But women don't have that refractory period. So men sometimes think that, oh, you know what? I don't want her to come because if she comes, then she probably doesn't want to have sex. No, you've got to understand that doesn't matter.
Right.
You can give her orgasms multiple, three or four or five times. Do your really nice, you know, preparation. Do your foreplay. If she gets an orgasm, even better for you. You know what? Give her another orgasm.
Yes.
So don't be in a rush to get it in. That's what I always tell guys.
Good tip.
Passionate, long sex. Of course, sometimes we don't have time for it. You know,
right.
Sometimes there are kids, this, that. And be open. This is both for guys and women. And don't hate me for this. Be open to threesomes.
Ooh, okay. Well, this is a hot tip. I'm here for it.
Who is the safest person to bring in? This is the third person you want to bring in. Okay.
I was all about, like, I was like, okay, who should I bring in for my threesome? Yes. No, I think it's common for men to sometimes get intimidated by introducing sex toys because sometimes they feel like maybe it's taking over their job or something. But it's only, and I'm not speaking from experience because my partner is all about, you know, bringing in whatever, bring whatever sex toys you want. But I think it's common for men to feel like intimidated by them because they feel like the toy is going to do a better job than me. But it's really benefiting both people if you think about it.
No, listen, that's what I tell people. And I'm glad you are here. And of course, we're going to talk about it a lot more after our collaboration that we did.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Comes out.
But we don't call them sex toys. We call them sex tools.
Tools, yes. You know? They are tools. Exactly.
They are tools because just like a screwdriver you use or a hammer you mm-hmm. use, it makes your life easier.
Right.
You know, it's just like a car that you use. Car is a tool for you. Can you walk from here for like 5 miles? Yes, of course. How long is it going to take you? It's going to take you 2 hours, an hour and a half.
Right.
How long is it going to take with the car? It's going to take you 10 minutes. It makes your life so much easier.
Efficiency.
I can tighten like one screw in a minute.
Right.
But if I have the screwdriver, I can tighten five of them in a minute. If I have an electric screwdriver, I can tighten 20 of them in a minute. So your partner is going to be happier. You are going to be happier. And when you can have 10 orgasms in, you know, half an hour that you guys are intimate, why shouldn't you? Because amen. Trust me, those 10 orgasms, you give 10 times more oxytocin to your woman. You give 10 times more endorphins. And after that, she's going to be like, you know what? She wouldn't want to be even with anybody else.
Right. Yes, I know. I'm so excited for the collaboration that we worked on together. It's all about the toolbox. They're tools. So yeah, everybody stay tuned for that. I can't wait. So I wanted to touch on more personal questions. What do you do to stay mindful? I know you said you kind of meditate and things like that, but like, are there other things that you're doing on a daily basis to stay mindful?
You know, I think, and this is something that I believe everybody out there should do. I feel you have to give yourself, with these days, you know, being in our phones and always having some kind of a stimulation, you have to start from somewhere. I give myself 5 minutes at a time that I do nothing but just thinking, you know.
Oh, yes, now, thinking time.
You can do it different ways. Sometimes you can do it in bed, but when you do it in bed, you end up falling asleep.
Right.
So I prefer to do it different times of the day, but just focus on either like thinking or focus on reading. It is very important. And don't read on your phone.
Yeah.
Pick up a book. And for a good 10 minutes, feel like I'm giving myself 10 minutes and slowly, maybe in the beginning, you want to run back to your phone and check Instagram and check this and that. But you know what? After a while, you get into that routine. Your 10 minutes can become 15 minutes, 20 minutes, because we are in a world that's completely changed from what it was 20 years ago.
I know.
There's so much stimulation. And you know, the problem with it, Cherokee, is that I look at my phone, let's say.
Right.
Okay, I checked my emails. I'm like, oh, okay, now I need to text that person. And now some notification comes on my Instagram.
Yeah.
Somebody calls from the office. There are so many things. You never get that 5 minutes to sit down and think, okay, what do I want to do? What about Amir? What about Cherokee? What about my own life? So that is the thing. You got to give yourself that time, and you got to just be digitally free of anything else.
It's so important. If you don't allow yourself even just those 5 simple minutes, it's like we're always having to respond, and we're so reactive all the time, especially if we're on our phones. Because like you said, it's like a ripple effect. Like, oh, you go and check an email, and then you get a text message, and then you get an Instagram notification. And then it's like, it just turns into this like hamster wheel of nonstop having to respond to people. So I think that that's such a good tip. And I need to practice that more, because it's so easy to say, but
very difficult.
Yeah.
But one other thing, that depending on the kind of job that you do,
right?
You're a podcaster, you're interviewing me, you're not thinking about anything else. When you focus on one job,
being present.
You know, I say don't pick up your phone in the middle. I mean, this you can't, because it's do not disturb.
Right.
Neither of us can check the notification. But for me, I feel like I'm blessed with having my outlet. One of my biggest outlets is my surgeries. You know, I'm sitting. It's kind of like, you know, being an artist, I'm sitting in front of this vagina for 5 hours, and everything else is disconnected.
Right.
Of course, I'm asking my assistant, give me this instrument, give me that instrument. But at the same time, listening to Frank Sinatra or something like slow, that's very, you know, it stimulates the right side of my brain.
Yeah.
Whether it's that or something slow from like Michael Bublé or something. And then I'm doing my work as I'm listening to my favorite music and just enjoy what I'm doing there without having to get into all the digital things. And now check the email. So I think that's a really good outlet for me. Sometimes that feels better than anything else, especially as you see the difference from beginning to the end.
Right. Yeah. Because you're producing a result, and it's kind of like meditative in a way, I would expect. Because you have to be so present and so focused on what you're doing. And that's nice too. Like, I didn't even think about the fact that you get to like listen to music while you operate, because it's not just like silent in there. I'm sure it's nice to just like have something light and nice in the background on.
Of course.
How do you listen to your intuition? I know this is hard to put into words because it is such like a feeling that you have, but if you could explain it, how would you say that you listen to your intuition?
I mean, honestly, it's very difficult to answer, because I feel like it naturally happens.
Right.
And sometimes you don't even know. To me, I believe in a higher being.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever you want to call it God, call it, you know, energy. There is something higher than us. And
absolutely.
It always took care of me. I learned from my father, like before I start a surgery, you know, for a second, I tell myself, well, you know what? I'm doing this. This is my plan. But you got me, and you take care of my hands, and you make sure I perform the best way that I can. And then I feel like everything comes to me that's during surgery or even during day-to-day life.
Yeah.
It's something naturally that comes back.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's really powerful to have that faith in something, because then I think it allows you to kind of tune into yourself better, because you have this trust.
My father is always, he's a very firm believer in God. And this is what he said. He's like, people who are scared of God. He's like, when you are scared of God, you're not scared of anybody or anything else. And people who are not scared of God, and then he's like, they are the ones who are scared of anything and everything else, because they are not scared of God. So anybody can scare them, or anything can be like, oh, what's going to happen to this? But I have that belief that, you know, whoever is out there is taking care of me. So nothing really scares you. It doesn't matter if you're in the middle of an emergency. I was just, I was in Haiti right after earthquake, and I've done a lot of nonprofit work there. Mm. You get somebody who is like literally cut in the middle of their body and they're pouring blood in front of you.
Oh my gosh.
You got to be able to believe that you can handle this.
Right.
Otherwise, there's no way you can handle it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh my goodness. That takes so much strength. I admire you so much. I can't even imagine witnessing that, let alone having the pressure of being responsible to be the one to fix it. Like, that's...
You are the only person there.
Wow. That's incredible. What are some of your lifestyle non-negotiables? And this can be little practices that you incorporate into your day-to-day life to make you feel like the best version of yourself.
You know, I like to spend time with my son. That's very important.
How old is your son?
He's 7 years old. He's going to be 8 soon. So that's something that's really important to me.
Absolutely.
And being connected with family, with friends, you know, it doesn't matter how long. I have a lot of friends, you know, you can imagine. I did my school back in Iran, med school back in Iran, then moved to England, then moved here. So there are lots of friends here and there. And some of them I haven't spoken for years. Mm-hmm. But if something happens, and good thing for social media is that everybody's connected.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, a friend of mine recently texted me, and this is a guy we probably haven't spoken for the past 27, 28 years. And he's like, oh, you know, I see that you're in New York. There's this issue I have with my kid who is right now in New York. You know, I'm very loyal to my friends. So I feel like that is something that gives you identity. So that's non-negotiable. If you ask me for help and we know each other, doesn't matter. My family says, oh, you know, now we don't have time for this. So almost to a fault, I go out of my way to, or with my patients even.
Right.
But for my patients, it's a given. But that is something that's very, always been non-negotiable, you know?
Yeah. It's just like the connections that you have in your life. I feel like it's so important to prioritize the connections that you have.
We are alive with each other, you know, and that's what we got to understand.
Right.
It's a day that people right now, you do everything on your computer.
Yeah.
And your phone, and you think that you are connected, but you are not really connected to anyone or anything. And that's the problem. A lot of problems, I feel, start from that. So you need to keep that, even if it's like calling people. You know, they say you prefer to have $1 million or 1 million friends. And, you know, the right answer is like to pick that 1 million friends.
Right.
It is really important to have people, even if you don't talk to them regularly. You know somebody on the other corner of the board. I know that, you know, there's Cherokee in LA that if I ever come there and if I need something or I want to talk to you, I pick up the phone. I'm like, you know what? Let's hang out. Let's get a coffee. I want to talk to you about this project.
Yeah.
Or let's just, you know, talk. So that's really important.
Yeah. I think that's such a good message too, especially nowadays. And with our children as well too. Like, I feel like we can so easily get super caught up in our work, our personal lives. And that's something that I try and practice on a daily basis is like, and I'm sure you do the same, that I'm sure that when you're with your son, I'm sure that you try your hardest to be as present as you can. And I think that that's so important to build that confidence in your children and the connection. And how do you spend time with your son? Like, what is he into right now?
We like to bike. We go on hikes and everything. I don't know if it's the right thing or wrong, but I got him an ATV, so we both get on the ATV.
That is the right thing. I love an ATV. So fun.
I love ATVs, yeah.
I grew up with ATVs. My dad is a big, like, outdoorsman, and those are, like, some of my best childhood memories, honestly. So fun. Last one. What is your fitness routine?
You know, it should be a lot more than what it is right now. These days, I try to stay on treadmill between half an hour to 1 hour a day.
Oh, that's great.
But of course, there are bad weeks that, let's say, traveling, right, you can't really do that. Today, between a couple of surgeries we had in the morning, I was able to go to the gym for a half hour. You know, especially when you pass I'm not going to tell you my age, but when you pass the age of 30, and in my case, 40, you have to do some weight training.
Absolutely.
Because your lean muscle is very important. Lean muscle is actually the part of your body that's going to spend all the extra calories. So it's much easier to gain lean muscle in this age rather than when you get to your 60s and 70s.
Yes.
So you see people who were fit when they get older, they are still fit.
Yeah, I know. It's all about the maintenance. And even like, I know sometimes people get discouraged or say like, oh, I didn't do as good of a workout as I had wished that I had gotten in. But I always have the mindset of like, a small workout or a short workout is better than no workout at all. So
absolutely,
as long as you're doing something, I feel like that's all that matters, and just moving your body. One last question I ask everybody at the end of every episode is, if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, what would you say to the younger version of yourself?
Knowing everything that I know right now.
Yeah.
I mean, knowing everything I know right now, I would buy some Bitcoin, but
yeah, I know.
I think all of us would have done
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I love that.
No, but look, I don't really think I would have done anything differently, but the kind of person that I am, I would try to do more when I could, meaning that I would try to learn. Look, there was a time that I lived in France and Switzerland as a kid, and my French was really good back then. I wish I stayed on top of that.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the more you use your brain, it's just like your muscle.
Exactly.
You feel more satisfied. That's what I feel. But at the end of the day, I'm a nerd too, so maybe I'm not the best person to
Yeah, I think everybody can relate to that, because I look back even and I'm like, oh, if I had just put a little bit more effort into school, or if you had just tried a little bit harder in this area of your life, things would have been so different. But I think everybody can kind of relate to what you're saying, and just, you know, you wish you would have given more of an effort.
But listen, the good thing is that especially with this era,
yeah,
and having access to everything, is never late.
Yes,
and
I love that.
I think you need to every single day try to learn something new, whether it's like a new dish you are making or read a new book. It's a very bad timing. Having all this information at our fingertips, the neurons in your brain can get very lazy. You know,
yeah.
There was a time that you needed to be able to calculate everything in your mind, and then slowly you wrote it on the paper, and now we do it with calculator, and now your computer and your ChatGPT does everything for you.
Right. Yeah.
Imagine, I used to memorize phone numbers. We don't. We used to know how to go find our direction. And then MapQuest came. And then now there's GPS, and people don't even know how to drive without GPS.
I know. I'm a victim.
We all are.
Yeah.
So, Cherokee, it's very important to keep teaching yourself different things, because we got to keep our brains sharp.
Yeah.
And that's a very big problem, that slowly it's going to happen. You know, I don't want to say we become dumb.
Just lazy, I think.
We become lazy. I mean, well, you know, the computer, and that's fine. Learn something else. Know how the computer works.
Right.
You know, teach yourself a new language. And it's okay that you can do the same thing with the computer, but you don't want to end up being like 70 years old and have like Alzheimer's, or, you know, not be able to use. So this is very, I tell people, I'm like, make sure you have a reading routine. Make sure you learn something.
Yeah.
Learn something new every single day. Tell yourself, you know, this week I want to learn about this. This week I want to learn about something else. And for us that we have kids, this would be a very good, being a great role model for your children, because they're like, oh, you know what? Mommy or daddy is reading. I should be reading too.
Right. Because they literally, you set the example for your children. That's such a good note to end on. And it's so inspiring. And yeah, you just inspired me to like learn something new every single day. I feel like I just learned so much just within this hour conversation with you. So thank you so much for all of the amazing information. and just for being such an advocate for women's health, women's pleasure. I am just so thankful that I met you that day, and I'm so excited for the collaboration with Mother to come out. When does that launch, by the way?
I think it's after Mother's Day.
Okay. I'm so excited. Yeah. So everybody stay tuned for that. And where can everybody find you, connect with you, follow you, and get Saray products, all of that?
If you want to learn about the procedures and everything that I do, my Instagram is the best. NYC, like New York City, NYC, G-Y-N-O, NYC Gyno.
NYC Gyno, yep.
For Saray, the Instagram and the website is the same, Get Saray,
yes.
G-E-T-C-E-R-E.
Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Amir. I appreciate you. And let me know whenever you're in LA and we can connect.
Of course.
Yeah.
And Cherokee, let me add one more thing, since if anybody wants to, I'm going to ask the team to add a little code for your listeners.
Oh, that would be amazing. Thank you.
For podcasts that I go on, we give like a 15% discount to the listeners, so we can do Cherokee 15. How's that?
Perfect. That would be amazing. My audience will love all of the products, so I'm excited.
Perfect.
Thank you, Dr. Amir. Have an amazing rest of your week. What a great start to my week. So thank you.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you for having me.
Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you gained some insight on how to practice becoming more mindful, learned the importance of listening to your intuition, gained some lifestyle takeaways and fitness tips. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to the podcast. It means so much to me and is really the best way to support the show. And if you feel inclined, please do not hesitate to leave a review. You can follow me on Instagram at Cherokee Luker and the podcast at The MILF Way. So make sure you follow along to access my personal content and content pertaining to the podcast to help you become the best version of yourself. Talk to you all very soon. Love, love.